Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is June 21st, 2005. Today's session is entitled Revisioning Justice, presented by Evelyn Parker and Don Richter.
That's the phrase we're going to start with.
Oh. Okay. What are we going to say?
Okay. Did he hear you?
Yeah.
Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Evelyn Parker, and this is Don Richter, and we will be sharing with you today some of the ideas that have been written about and continue to be reflected upon about justice as a practice, as a Christian practice. Let me just say briefly about how this idea came about. Some of you may or may not be familiar with the book Way to Live. Well, I and Raymond Rivera, my team partner, were responsible for writing the chapter on justice in this book. And this week, today, tomorrow, and on Thursday, we'll be sharing some of the aspects or some of the ideas that have come from our reflections on that Christian practice and expanding on some of the things that are there. I want to thank you for being here today. And I'll say in a few minutes what we plan on doing today and then how it connects with the next 2 days. But before I do that, I want to thank my team's teaching associates for some of their work for today in terms of helping us prepare for this session, from writing posters to actually gathering some books. So thank you very much. Let me acknowledge you for that. On today, we're going to explore definitions of justice based on our experiences primarily, and then also our interpretation of scripture. So we'll begin at our own within our own experiences and our own contextual understanding of justice. And that's primarily what we'll do today. We'll also share with you, as you can see on the tacked up on the wall, the definition that's at the heart or the main idea of justice in the book Way to Live. And we'll talk a little about that as well. On tomorrow, we're going to actually do some strategizing for how to respond to injustice in the world. So actually kind of practice responses to injustice through a theatrical process called forum theater from theater of the oppressed techniques. And on Thursday, we're going to look at justice in relationship to mission trips. Okay, so that's kind of an overview. Now, if you have not already had an opportunity, I want to invite you to either come up to the graffiti board and write a word or phrase for justice, or just kind of look at the graffiti board before I begin to kind of go through this and have some conversations about where we are in our definitions or phrases for justice. So if some of you have not had opportunity, think for a moment what you might, what word or phrase you might use to define for justice, and go to our graffiti board. And if you are so inclined, you can also draw something like Don has done. That will symbolize that. So take a few minutes if you haven't already done that. We need some traveling music. Yeah.
Can you read the words from back there?
Yes.
No.
Yes, no.
What is the word in red on the left?
Expanding.
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 There's another word, fair.
I can read that one, but I couldn't read the other one.
Instead of having me actually walk down, can you write something for me?
Sure.
Write the word expensive.
Okay. Any color. We have green, red, or black.
Red.
Okay. Expensive.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Is there anybody else who wants to just call a word out?
Mm-hmm. And I don't know exactly how to phrase it, but something about, and I know this might be a loaded word, but restoration to God's plan.
Wasn't
as eloquent as I might. Restoration to God's plan.
Plan?
Yeah.
Okay.
What's the first word you just wrote?
Restoration.
Oh.
I don't print very well, I'm sorry about that.
How about putting brotherhood?
Okay. Brotherhood. Others. Looks like we have a variety of phrases and words for justice. Just about one-to-one as many people that are here, from right relationship, mutuality, expanding. Would you want to tell us a little bit about what you were thinking when you wrote that?
No.
Good. Fine. When I see that, and the image that comes into my head is something that has no boundaries, mm-hmm. that is limitless, infinite. That's what I kind of imagine.
Great.
Underneath that is sharing the abundance of the universe equitable. You see any combinations or some that are similar to each other? Did you want to write? Well,
no, it's just that these are so bad.
Did you want to share
one?
Come on, sir.
I just
wanted
to bring
it. Okay, thank you.
You can do it again.
Any connections you see with some of these words or phrases that you think like make a nice coupling?
Symbiotic.
Mutuality.
And symbiotic.
And symbiotic. Yeah.
What does symbiotic mean? What does symbiotic, yes. I don't know what.
Someone who wants to share, who wrote it up,
wrote
would
it
you
up?
Like to talk about it?
I put
yes.
it up there. I guess it was kind of spurred by mutuality. That's what brought it to my mind. Just a relationship in which both partners are gaining from the relationship.
Also are dependent on each other.
Yeah, they're dependent on each other.
Yeah.
Okay.
I write terribly, but that's interdependence. And that's a phrase, a word that I just experienced at a conference on mutuality and interdependence that had something to do with some of these issues of justice. So I want to add that one as a result of that. Some other partnered words are
well, fair and equality seem to have a balance to them.
Okay. This one and this one. When we think of fair, what images come to mind for us? Or equal? Or equality? Yes?
Nothing else.
Sure.
Compassion and just mercy.
Compassion and mercy? You want to couple those together? Mm-hmm. Say more. What's the first thing that comes to your mind? Just from a gut level, why?
Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because to show mercy, you have to at least have compassion for that person, or at least be there a little bit.
Okay. Compassion and mercy. There's the two that you're coupling because, say it again?
They both relate to caring about people enough to act.
Okay, great. Any other couples? What is missing? Do we see anything that, are we thinking of things that are not here? That we're compelled to say,
Lack of exploitation.
Lack of exploitation. You want to add that to the list? Okay, great.
How about something like not-for-profit?
Some other things. Which is interesting because the issues around justice in terms of expensive, not-for-profit gets into ideas of consumerism and capitalism and how we spend the things that God has stewarded us with, how we are stewards of material.
That's definitely thunder.
Yeah. What's that?
That's definitely thunder. We were trying to decide if we were hearing thunder.
Yes, no question about that. Yeah. That is thunder. Equal employment opportunities is here on the board, which is in a sense indirectly related to that, but in terms of how people actually can support themselves.
And with that, the opportunity to live with other people who are your peers, irrespective of what color their skin is. You know, you can move into a subdivision because that's where other people in your office live and buy a house and it's okay. That's justice.
Do you want to, that's justice, you want to add like fair housing? Is that something that
fair housing, yes. I'm beginning to think, I've been to a lot of sessions and I think it gets awfully abstract. And I think once in a while it helps if we talk about some concrete things. Is that some of the things we can do something about?
Okay. Good. And in other words, what you're saying, how people live is about justice and how we can help them live in ways where they are not struggling with the issue of justice, whether it's in terms of the money that they get or it's how they live, fair housing, equal employment. Some others up here that might relate to that.
Lack of exploitation?
Yeah. Don, you want to say anything about plumb line?
Well, that's a concrete image of to try to get a little concrete, you know, it's a prophetic image. And I think sometimes that, again, with the images that get a bit abstract, you know, we need some concreteness. Mm-hmm. Now, imagery can both provide a concrete, you know, metaphor to anchor something, but it also opens it up again for us too. So it does both of those things at the same time. Yeah.
Well, the plumb line images, I think, really helpful to talk about justice because a plumb line is a measure.
Yeah.
Right. So we have words like equality, fairness. Well,
how do you measure it?
What do you mean fair? Mm-hmm. What's going to be fair in this case, mm-hmm. right? And
fairness.
Right. No one is ever against fairness. Everybody is in favor of being fair. So it seems like that would solve all the world's problems. Everyone agrees we want to be fair? All right. But how you define fairness,
right.
how you define justice, and makes a huge difference. So to say something like plumb line is to at least suggest there has to be some specificity to the goal, and you have to be able to ground that specificity somewhere. Now, plumb line, of course, depends on, we were talking about gravity yesterday, I mean, it depends on that kind of standard, and maybe that's what's missing up there. There's some possible references is some notion of from what basis do we say what's fair, what's equal, what's beneficial, something like even like symbiotic to say it's mutually beneficial. Well, what do you mean by beneficial?
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Good. I want to make two comments. This relationship of brotherhood to right relationship, I think, could be partnered together. And also, peace without justice and justice without peace is some people would argue is not possible. You cannot have justice without peace, cannot have peace without justice. Well, in light of what you said and what all of you all have shared, I'd like to move to one way we've kind of looked at the issue of justice definitionally in terms of the chapter in Way to Live. And we're gonna give you a handout in a few minutes that will have this so you can see it. And be able to take it with you. But I just want to read that to you now. It's only a little the newsprint that's hanging in the rear, and I'll just read it. God wants all people to blossom and flourish, yet unjust social structures cause many to wither and perish. Seeking justice includes trying to be fair to people we meet and also working for fair treatment in society. God's justice means more than balancing the scales and making things fair. However, God's justice works through God's mercy, which gives human beings the freedom and grace to live justly and mercifully together. Now, that's a definition that we came up in terms of this idea. That's one definition. But I think what we've brought here, or what we brought to this gathering, are many perspectives on justice that we see some connections with, as well as some imagery that kind of helps us to give justice the idea to take on flesh and be real. So what we want to do now is to kind of keep these ideas that we gathered together with as we move into actually thinking about a process of growth towards understanding justice from our experiences. Okay? Done.
Okay. And building on what you said, Deanne, it's not only the different stories and experiences we bring that give us these different understandings. As we know from, you know, developmental psychology, some of you probably had this before, studied Kohlberg and his theory. As we grow up, as we mature in age, we have different understandings of what's fair and what makes for justice. And we're going to take a few minutes just to look at these evolving notions we have of justice. This is kind of a little, that we'll just get this handout going around here. There are five understandings of justice on this, under these bullet points here, and they're not in order. So what I'd like you to do is get in groups of four, just pull your chairs around, and spend a few minutes seeing if you can kind of rank these from the more simple ones. What's one that, start with thinking of maybe a 4 or 5 year old. What would a 4 or 5 year old think of as constitutes justice? What is it as a 8 or 9 year old? What might they say if you ask them? And then maybe a person who's a bit older, a teenager, then a young adult, or an older adult. So take a few moments and you can sort of see if you can kind of figure out which one of these ideas may go more for children and which ones for are ones that might even ground our society in the United States. And these are not, there's nothing theological about this at this point. These are just kind of ideas, understandings of what justice might look like at different ages. Okay? So again, pull yourselves into groups of four and see if you can.
Four or five.
Okay, let me call us together here. You may not have had a chance to go all the way through the list or talk it all the way through. I'll give you the kind of rundown of how Kohlberg understood this when they did a lot of interviews with people, and then we can talk about this whole system if you want to. Kohlberg found that when he interviewed younger children, they tended to say, again, 4 or 5 year old children, they would tend to say might makes right. They would tend to say that, you know, when you're a bigger person, that bigger person's in authority, and just what that person says goes. It's kind of, you know, that's your understanding of what's fair or just. And you can start thinking of this in terms of your own experience or in terms of how you know, we treat people today, or how we treat other nations as a country ourselves. The next sort of stage here he would identify is the stage of I would call this the imperial self, the 8 or 9 year old self. And this is the self that will say, you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. People who are the most useful to me get preferential treatment. It's real interesting that I think our prison systems are set up. This kind of understanding of justice doesn't require mutuality. It doesn't require some of the things that we've talked about here at all. It doesn't really require trust in relationships. It just means, you know, if you want something from me, you've got to give me something. Quid pro quo. You've heard that phrase used, right? So prison systems are often set up this way, too. We think there's any possibility of trying to rehabilitate people. It's very difficult to do when you've got a system that operates just this way. I would say that, you know, that countries that are under totalitarianism or fascism or, you know, under state communism, the way it was practiced, often, you know, this was the kind of operative mindset, the operative principle, the understanding of justice that tended to permeate the society. But there's the next level up is still has some problems for according to this, because it's whatever my tribe says. Here you've got a sense of trust perhaps, but I'm only going to trust people who are like me, and maybe I won't trust you. You know, you're female, so I'm gonna trust males. All right, I'm gonna trust, you know, people who are from the southeast where I'm from. I'm not going to trust these folks out on the West Coast. And people who are in my tribe, you know, ought to get treatment, and that's what's fair. And it doesn't matter what happens to people anywhere else. Okay, this, again, you can apply this not just to individuals, but to nations. Think about the way our nation tends to understand, you know, justice when it comes to things like the World Court, for instance. Whether we want to participate in that or not. Oh, you know. Or whether we want to be held accountable for our laws in any other international setting. The one that's sort of next beyond this is whatever the law says would be a bit more advanced or complex understanding. There's still, you know, you tend to become a Pharisee here. You at least have something that you're appealing to beyond, you know, your tribe. You're appealing to something that's written out, something that can be shared among a group of people. But, you know, you can get very legalistic when it comes to justice here. However, again, having something like that is better than not having it. It's just that it has a limitation as well. As we'll see, you know, when we look through the pages of Scripture, especially the New Testament, and Jesus is constantly bumping up against this kind of understanding, right? Then another, what Kohlberg would say, a more advanced understanding is equal treatment for everyone. Those of you who study philosophy, which is probably a good number of you, you know, this is sort of Immanuel Kant's understanding of justice. Laws themselves are held accountable to a standard that treats persons as ends in themselves and not means to an end. So, you would say that, in a sense, in a perfect world, maybe laws and concepts of justice would be grounded in this understanding. And again, a lot of you got at that in terms of equal opportunity, equality, and understanding that treating all persons in a similar way is what grounds any concept of justice. Now, that said, and I've overheard some comments about the whole Kohlberg notion. There's a limitation in all of this, because Kohlberg understood pretty much that these notions were tied. You couldn't have a more complex or advanced understanding of justice until you reached a certain age, until you sort of shifted gears, your cognition shifted gears into a higher gear, and then you were capable of, you know, more advanced thinking. If that's the case, if we're sort of limited to this, these concepts of justice, then, you know, we might as well just forget about Christian education. We might as well forget about doing teaching the Bible, because there's some different understandings and there's some different ways that we have access to stories and images of justice, even as young children, that can help us maybe transcend. And when I use the term transcend, I don't mean that we leave behind our developmental kind of framework, but in the sense you can transcend that, you can still have a larger grasp of justice than just what is implied here. Does that make sense? So even a young child who may be in the mind frame of might makes right because of their developmental stage still can have a broader understanding of justice than that if they're given the biblical stories and images. That's exactly what happened, if you know, with the story of Ruby Bridges and the powerful story of a young woman, African-American woman, young girl at the time. She was six years old. And during the desegregation of schools, and she was, Robert Coles was there and watching her, and she was going and being spat upon and taunted by angry white crowds, and she was walking to the school building, and she would come up to the top of the steps and go like this and go in. He wondered, what in the world is she doing? And a teacher said, well, and one of the officers escorting her said, well, she seems to be praying for those people that are doing this. And he couldn't understand this. And he thought, well, this is bizarre. And so he goes and interviews her family, and he talks with her and finds that she has this much bigger understanding. You know, Jesus tells her to pray for enemies. She knows that these people are her enemies. So she's able to kind of transcend some of the limitations of this scheme here. She's, might makes right, well, no, that wasn't it. She knew these people weren't right, and she knew that it was bigger than you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. She had some bigger concept of justice and forgiveness than what this kind of scheme provides. Well, let's take a look at a couple biblical stories now.
Before we do that, I'm interested in some of your responses to what you've done, some things that kind of bubbled up in your groups as you looked at Kohlberg's typology. Do we have some swearing and gnashing of teeth?
Well, not only do I also have objections to the problem of the ages, but my other main objection to Kohlberg's theory is that maybe this was why Ruby Bridges was also able to perhaps transcend, is that my understanding is that Kohlberg only looked at young males and not, he didn't look at females in the way that females might understand, areas of, aspects of justice that may not even fit into this framework. Like, for example, I've read stories of, especially a Latin American woman, for example, where the top level of Kohlberg's theory is that, well, let's say your spouse is sick, and do you go and steal, the drugs that you need to make your spouse better from a pharmacy, even though it's wrong to steal and that's what the law says? And the correct answer for this, if you attain the highest level of justice, is that yes, you can go and steal because the life is more important than the law. But Latin American women, when asked, then, well, would you go and steal food if you're, for your starving child? And they say, well, there's other ways that I can find food. I can ask my family, I can ask my friends, there's other ways around this. Mm-hmm. And so they're still respecting both the law and the life of the child. And that doesn't fit into Kohlberg's theory at all. So there's, I think, also some gender issues that aren't really addressed in Kohlberg's theory.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And Carol Gilligan came along and helped to address some of those disparities in terms of the actual test group that Kohlberg was using. Yeah, good. Some other responses to Kohlberg's typology, or some of the things that might have bubbled up in your groups.
What we thought, there are only two of them that were positive. The others were all negative. Number two and number four have positive implications for justice, where the others were not.
Yeah, the other ones feel limited. Very limited.
Very limited
in terms of what we would call justice from an adult angle. Yeah.
group came to some conclusion that we must experience some arrested development. Because even though this movement up makes sense, mm-hmm. A high schooler who can say equal treatment for everybody, that is the way, by the time he or she is a CEO mm-hmm. and negotiating mm-hmm. things, the back scratching thing might make more sense. I mean, so it, there's, you know, examples of regression or arrested development or situational justice or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I tend to think that we all have sort of a default mode. You know, I think my default mode may be the sort of 4 or 5 year old impulsive self sometimes. I think the same is true for these others, that we may, when pushed against the wall or something, some of these earlier views of justice, you know, you find yourself saying, you know, that's not fair on the basis of I give that person something and I'm not getting something back in return or whatever, you know, and you know, that's not fair. And you feel yourself sounding like an 8-year-old or something. Yeah.
Does Kohlberg say that all of these responses remain in us? Maybe we don't just graduate out of
them. That's true.
It all stays there.
Yeah, they're all parts, they're cells that you build on.
And so when we're afraid or threatened,
yes.
we probably regress to some.
Right.
One of the things that strikes me about the one that you said is for 4 and 5 year olds is the way the explanation says people who are bigger, older, or powerful than me get to define justice. But I think there's another way that gets articulated, which is because I'm bigger, older, or more powerful than you,
yes.
I get to define what's justice. And so that when you try and see if it's what's the reverse or what's the complement, I don't know if it works with the other ones, but it's really striking to me in that one, the way in which a situational change might make that more or less attractive to someone, right? So if I'm younger, smaller, and less powerful, then this seems like kind of a bad idea. But if I'm bigger, older, and more powerful, I might think it's a really good definition, or more senior. That's sort of what occurred to me as an academic administrator, that often I hear people saying, seniority is the thing that, if you do make these decisions,
right.
what will make it fair is if you take account of seniority.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. So we still use all the time when it serves our advantage.
Yeah.
And absolutely, you know, parents, I know I told you that you could have, you know, you could stay up until 9 o'clock, but we really can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, I know we agreed to that, but you know, it's late and I've got work to do and I need you to go to bed right now.
Yeah.
Not that I've ever said it. To my children. No, but you know, we've made a deal and then we go back on it. And why? They ask us why, and we say, well, because I'm your parent and I say so. So we use that, exactly.
Yes, well, and I think if my tribe, my friends, my family are not protected by the law, I'm probably going to put a higher emphasis on what the tribe says is justice because I have access to it there than what the law says.
Yes, and I want to dovetail on that because when I was looking at this, I was thinking, with my research with kids that are in gangs, that would be where they would be located. Because for them, the only people that they feel that they can trust is their group, their family, or their gang.
Mm-hmm.
And justice would be spelled out within that, however that might be so antithetical to justice in terms of other communities, the law, or whatever. But for them, this is who defines what is right and what is wrong, because I can trust that group to have my back.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to move us right ahead here into a looking at two different biblical stories, actually Jesus' parables. They're listed on the sheet here, and we'll get our team assistants to help pass Bibles out quickly. I'd like for this group and those of you up there to look at the Luke passage, and the rest of you look at the Matthew passage, right?
Yes.
At the Matthew passage.
It's on here.
And you've got the questions there, and this is related to what we were just talking about, which is that we often draw on these understandings of earlier understandings of justice when we're in a situation where fairness is at stake. So the question is, which of these earlier justice frames tend to be at play here in these parables? When people are saying it's not fair, on what basis are they saying it's not fair?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. Are we circling?
These are.
Well,
okay, let me call us together. I know, again, you're still in the middle of your conversations, perhaps. Let's begin with the Matthew passage, because I know that Mike Hobler used that the other night. Maybe some of you were there and can draw on some things that he said about that in that session. What did you find as you looked at this through the lens of the justice frame that we've been talking about?
There was no injustice because he paid the folks just exactly what he told them, what they agreed upon, except that he was more beneficial for the ones that came later. That was his option.
Okay. But didn't some people think it was unfair?
Of course.
Out of which of these frames were they operating? What was their... What provoked their sense of injustice? This is the parable of the day laborers.
They received a higher wage per hour. And they felt that was not fair.
They weren't treated equally.
Or, well, maybe they were.
They thought they were not treated equally.
Because?
Because some people put more labor into the day than others.
Right. So, if you give a certain, if there's a certain amount you put in, you expect a certain amount back. Those who work more ought to get more in return, and that's what ought to be fair.
And you know, I think this is very deep in the American psyche, that I should get back in proportion to what I do. And you know, you were talking about parenting, and I think, you know, we do this all the time when we say,
yes,
there are going to be consequences, you know, that the principle of fair parenting is there will be, the consequences are going to match what you do.
Okay.
And
yes.
And this story seems to contradict that. Mm-hmm. Anytime someone seems to get more or less than what they put in, we think that's unfair and unjust.
Okay.
It goes very deep.
So what is that? I mean, what are we learning about the sense of God's sense of justice in this story?
It has a different gravity. A different,
different gravity and sense of the plumb line.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's based out of the relationship rather than laws, rules external to that relationship.
Okay. Based on relationship instead of external laws.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Even though we said in this case. The agreement.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking.
Oh, you're thinking of the other.
I think it works too.
Works for both. But there was in this case an agreement.
Yeah. That was honored.
It was honored.
Yeah.
Which was that there was a, you know, you work, you're paid this wage. And regardless of the amount of time you work. but it still provoked this sense of these earlier senses of indignation. You know, my big strife is the person who's paying, who's dishing out the money here, is in power and has authority to do this, and it's something about it's not fair. In this case, might makes right. It provokes me. Or, you know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. That, operating out of that sense, it feels like injustice. That's what I'm thinking, is that these earlier understandings of justice and injustice, you know, well up in us in these kind of situations.
But I think that happens now. I know in the workforce, lots of times when they hire like a young college graduate, they have to pay them more, and yet you might have been at that company 20 years, and you're not making as much, and you're doing the same job, and you're teaching those kids, and yet that's the company's law. They have to be competitive, and I've been in that situation a couple of times, and you do have a feeling of, this isn't what I think's fair, but it's how it makes things work.
Okay. Is that does that feel the same as what's happening in this story?
I think it does with Matthew's, not so much with Luke's story, but that, I mean, I see that analogy in my own, you know, experiences, that I have those same feelings.
What about if you're in an airplane? How do you feel when you knew you paid $700 for the ticket and there's five or six other people that paid $200 for it? There's another injustice. That's the system.
I think that if you don't have a compassion and an empathy and an understanding of the situation, I think what it does is it forces you directly into what he just said.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't know your name, sir, but yes. That you become cynical and you just feel like, well, I need to be a better bargainer next time.
Right.
And so it moves you more into more of an economic approach to life versus what I think you're trying to get to today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's not. It seems a little different to me where. The person has paid the day laborer a living wage, and you know, enough to subsistence salary to get by on, then if people are being, there's the different economic tiers like you're talking about, there's in both cases the person is setting the pay scale in a sense, but it feels a little bit different if you're doing the same work and these other people are getting paid more. You haven't been at it as long. But since it seems a bit, sets up a different set of dynamics. Yes?
Well, just before we left to come here, we received an email written by Bill Gates to teenagers for advice. There were 12 points, I think. And the first one was, life is not fair. Get used to it. In other words, I think what he was saying is, you're going to find injustice,
yes,
and don't get hung up on it. Go on. He didn't say anything about fighting it, but there are many times it's not a win situation. You can't fight it. It's beyond that. And that perseverating to your own detriment is not a good idea. Mm-hmm.
This may be the case with the airline tickets. I mean, you know, it feels like there's the way the system works, you know, there's going to be some built-in inequalities about how much we pay for the same flight. But maybe that's not a place I'm going to choose to dig in my heels and resist. There may be other places where, maybe like in your situation, where there's more, we can do something more about it. Couple of quick comments, and then we need to shift to the next story. Yeah.
Well, this is part of this comes out of the next story. I think I'll.
Okay. Well, hold on just a second for that.
I was just going to say, it seems that a lot of it is just our own pride too, in how we determine what's. I mean, they all negotiated or agreed to, you know, work for this man, and he said, "I'll pay you what is fair," and it's all fine and dandy until you find out. You know, or maybe you take on a job, you accept a job offer for a certain amount, and then you realize, hey, that gal I went to school with was hired for more. So you were happy with it until you realize, suddenly there's a pride issue here. I'm not, you know, so competitive. It seems like a lot of it is our own ego kind of playing into our sense of justice.
Yeah, good point. It does. Susan?
I'm just thinking about both of these stories and what I prefer, lack of a better term, I might call
need-based justice. Mm-hmm. All those day laborers needed a day's wage to live. Mm-hmm. Some had the opportunity to work for it all day, and some didn't. Both of the sons needed a welcome and a home. And the prodigal got what he needed when he needed, which was this welcome home. And the elder is offered the same. But what it reminds me of is need-based tuition, or need-based scholarships.
Yep.
That, you know, a kid just beats his brains out to get a 4 point or whatever, and then another kid whose family has more need gets a bigger scholarship. And we kind of ran into that because we got need-based money that some other people who had been really, you know, close peers academically with our kids, and it did not feel just to the kids because they had worked equally hard. We just made less money. And, you know, so again, it's sort of, what is, can we talk about need-based justice? Or need-based something instead of fairness. I don't know. Fairness is everyone has access to higher education. So how, you know, what do you have to do that might look unfair to get to that point? Fairness is everyone gets a day's wage.
Yes.
What do you have to do to get to that point?
Yeah. Good. Thank you.
I don't know.
Thank you.
Yes. I've just been thinking about how the word same was not on the board, and just like what you were saying, that often we think about inequality and injustice as being synonyms, but I don't think they need to be. That those inequalities don't necessarily mean that there is injustice.
Thank you.
You want our segue into the next, I don't know your name, Nitty?
I'm Sonia.
Yes, Sonia.
We had the parable of the prodigal son.
Yeah.
And one of our members here has a point which I think is important for us all to hear. He's talking about the difference between justice and grace.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have something else I'd like to bring up first. I think we're missing what I see is the principal point of these two parables. Mm-hmm. In both cases, Jesus is speaking. And he is stating, the kingdom of heaven is like unto. These are descriptions of the heavenly kingdom, not advice for how we run our economic affairs, although it probably has an advantage for that.
Mm-hmm.
But as I see the message of this, God does not treat us identically, but well, he loves totally everybody. This, I think, is a fundamental of Christianity. But in pursuit of this, he gives his greatest attention to those with the greatest need. That, as I see, is the greatest message of both of these parables. Now,
no, that's what I wanted you to say.
Oh, okay.
That's what you were trying to tell us, and I wanted you to tell
us.
Yes. What you were trying to tell us. Very much so.
Thank you. I'm done.
Okay. Thank you. It's good because we're just about out of time, but did you have a comment on this?
I was a very similar thing. I just wanted to say that I think when we read parables, we have to first read them as they're presented, which is, this is about the kingdom of heaven. And then the next question, which is maybe when you want to talk about in the next session, is, well then, what's the relationship between the kingdom of heaven and where we actually live, which isn't quite the kingdom of heaven. So, to say, well, this is about labor contracts or something, well, then it's very interesting that the landowner says, why are you angry with me for being generous? Mm-hmm. He didn't understand himself to be unjust. He thought he was being generous. Mm-hmm. And the father similarly.
Right. And so how are we to be in the world? What way of life that is in relationship to these stories and to the teachings of Jesus that's grounded in this larger sense of generosity and grace, and yet also recognizes with Bill Gates that there's going to be an unfairness in life, and how do we make our way in the world in that context?
I find that in our family, this comes out, we don't have unlimited funds, and we have 17 grandchildren, and they have different needs, and we have assisted them unequally, but according to need, and it has developed some resentment.
I'm sure it has.
Yeah.
Sure it would be. Yes.
We're working on it.
Well, as we continue to think about these things, and we invite you to do that as we go forth, we also invite you to look at the bottom of that handout, and I just want to mention two things as we bring closure here, and that is, God wants all of us to flourish, to blossom and bloom into all that God had, that we have potential for. Do we have time for the song?
Yeah.
As we transcend into the music, as the music comes up in the background. And also, in addition to human flourishing that we for our potential, also to think about what it means in terms of God's grace and God's mercy, and how that mercy can manifest itself as we are God's agents for that mercy, so that we live mercifully with one another, is a task. And I think you've stated it well. How do we practice strategies for that will be our next switch in terms of tomorrow. How do we actually practice that? So I thank you for being with us today. And as we close out, Don is going to lead us in one verse.
Yeah, well, we can do, let's do 1 and 3. 290.
Okay.
This is one that's not going to, I guess, not going to be, I don't know, is this one, this is probably not going to be in the new hymnal.
Sure
it is.
It is?
It's still in there?
The
I'm sorry, 290.
29?
No,
290. 290. 290.
Okay. God's mercy.
There's a wideness in God's mercy.
Thank you for being and sharing with us today.
Yes. Thank you for being.